You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. You know, your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
We are bright early here on a Tuesday morning, but it's hard not to feel the energy when that song plays. Win the game, play the song. Here today with one of the threes, Mr. Jackson Brown. JB, how are you, brother?
Ross, I'm doing great. A lot to be excited about early here this week.
There is. I'm actually adding a piece here. Senior week to the script. Got to chat about that. Pretty big time. Yeah, it's senior week. It's UND week. But today is not that podcast. We will have that podcast, but today is not that podcast. That podcast will hopefully come later in the week. Let's dive real quickly, though, into the news. Christian Watson with three touchdowns and a win over the Cowboys, kind of breaking out from his injury issues for the Green Bay Packers. Matt Larson is away as part of the FCS selection committee, so he's got a big week ahead of him with a bunch of other athletic directors. We'll probably talk a little bit more about seeding on the UND preview podcast. This will not be a big seeding podcast. We can kind of discuss the scenarios, but I think the one that everybody wants and nobody's afraid, I don't think, of South Dakota State, but the easiest path probably has a Big Sky team at the end of it with no realistic path to the number one overall seed, or really the number two overall seed for NDSU. The path that folks want is the opposite side of the bracket from the Rabbits. That's what the people want. Hunter Lipke probably out for UND. That was something that Coach Ants talked about, and we'll talk a little bit more about Hunter. I want to get a player's take kind of on the handling of that. And we're not going to second guess people, but just kind of the injuries that you can play with, but sometimes hinder your effectiveness and how those can be handled. Things like that. Mason Miller, though, is out for the season, broken ankle or broken potentially the non weight bearing bone in his lower leg. It's 2 to 3 months. So there's no scenario in which, you know, maybe Frisco, but that's, I think even that is very, very unlikely. And they've announced that he's out for the season. So I don't think it much matters. I mean, it's a terrible injury, terrible timing for the injury. You feel just gutted for Mason, especially, you know, gets benched, comes back and has an awesome game against Indiana State. By all accounts, was playing fine against SIU and then no longer available. And that makes that makes Jake Rock, I think, the top backup on the offensive line. And you might say, well, Jake Rock can't play inside. You're correct. Jake Rock is a tall, skinny, not skinny is the wrong word, but Jake Rock is a tall Cordell-like, even though Cordell, I'm making bad examples. Jake Rock looks like Mason Miller. Jake Rock is a tackle. He is tall. He is lean. He is a tackle. And if something were to happen to someone on the interior, Gray would play inside and Rock would play at the tackle spot. And if something were to happen to Cody or Gray, Jake would just come in. I think, and this is just a brief conversation with the head man after the press conference where he just confirmed that with me, that Jake Rock would be the first guy off the bench. And I think the next guy is Hunter Pontius. Kays is the MVFC Defensive Player of the Week. Love that for Kays, especially that he is on his way out, that he is one of the guys that has been basically announced as leaving. And so that was one thing that we had a chance to kind of figure out based on some process of elimination, I think, with Dom Izzo tweeting about who would come back. He spoke to Coach Entz after the press conference. Jaden Price is going to come back. Julian Wodarczyk is going to come back. Jalen Sundell is going to come back. I bet Jalen Sundell is going to come back to not play center. That would be my guess. I think if Sundell's coming back, there's no way you're benching Westberg, because he's easily one of your best five. But that is a conversation for another day. Mathis is going to come back. Kobe's going to come back. Kubis is going to come back. And Tony Pierce is going to come back. What does that mean? Well, we did our best at Bison Report, because Coach mentioned 12 young men that have had the conversation with him that they are not coming back, that they would like to walk through the inflatable helmet and shake his hand, give him a hug, and play their last home regular season game. Cody Mock, Nash Jensen, Spencer Wagey, Hunter Lipke, we think Kaiser, we know Talbert, Tutsi, Weber, Tutton Weber can't come back. There's no seventh year. Tamarick was probably then one of those guys. La Salento is probably then one of those guys. Gindorf is probably one of those guys, though I think Gindy came out last year and then broke his leg and then unretired, if you will. And then the 12th guy is maybe Streit, Jacob Streit. We're not 100% sure, but I guess we'll bring you on here quickly, JB. What were your thoughts on the guys that are returning? So JP, Julian, Sundell, Mathis, Kobe, Kava, Kubis, and Pierce. I mean, that's a pretty big shot in the arm for next year's roster.
Yeah, it's huge. Anytime you got a veteran presence like that, especially in their sixth year, it's phenomenal. Am I necessarily surprised with all the guys that have decided to come back? I'd say a little bit. It comes to take a toll on these guys, and I absolutely love and can't say enough about these guys wanting to come back. Really just making every last snap possible count and trying to win as much as possible, and it'll be great for another young group of guys coming in.
For sure. And especially in the position that I talk about the most is that offensive line. I think they like their young depth, I think, but I don't know that they want to immediately turn to it, or I think that they're very, I'll put it to you this way. I think that they are very pleased to be able to welcome back what would basically be four starters, if not five, because Mason Miller is going to play next fall. Gray Zabel is going to play next fall. Kubis is going to play next fall. Westberg's going to play next fall. And Sundell's going to play next fall. There's your five, however you want to line them up. There's your five. And you don't necessarily have to go to Rock and Pontius and, some of the younger guys that they like fine, but buy them another year, and you've seen that a lot where make them the ogre, make your next guy the ogre, make your next guy maybe part of a more of a rotation now that you don't have absolute stalwarts like Mock and Jensen in there. Play a few more guys, and that might be kind of the look for next year's offensive line. But we're already an offensive line centric enough podcast or company, having Zach and Quinn around as often as we do. Folks, speaking of Quinn Olive, go see my guy Quinn at Tundra Insurance on the main Dragon Horus. They are located in the building immediately south of the original Big Herbs. Quinn does an amazing job. And if you're doing business with an insurance company where they only sell one product, you're taking a risk that product is exactly what you, your family, your business needs. And it's with the coverage that you need for the price that you want. Don't do that. Besides, if you do end up doing that, you're going to be in a situation where you got to see six or seven of those guys compare prices. It's a lot of your time. Don't waste your time. Have Quinn waste his time. Have Quinn do his job and shop with over 20 carriers for you over at Tundra Insurance. You can check them out at tundrainsurance.com. Let Quinn do the shopping for you. 701-969-1661. That's Tundra Insurance in Horace. Right now, we are going to bring on North Dakota State men's basketball analyst, Mr. Nate Zastro. Gracious enough to give us some time here as he drives home after a hard day's work. Mr. Zastro, how are you?
Doing well. Just had a long day of work, but ready to talk some hoops and some Bison basketball and kind of recap the week with you.
Yeah, we haven't spoken at all, really, since we've actually seen this team play. I think, you know, their strongest showing for me probably was the Fayetteville game. Really got punched in the mouth in the first half in Kansas, ended up winning the second half, but obviously that doesn't mean a whole lot when you lost the first half by 30. The Pacific game, which is the most recent game, you guys hopefully getting this right away on a Tuesday morning, was played two nights ago. I don't think Coach Richmond probably enjoyed giving up 91 points to a mid-major team.
No, and Pacific was picked 10th out of 10 teams in the West Coast Conference. Obviously, they have a bunch of transfers coming in from last year's team. They have a completely different team, and they kind of took it to them, and you're not going to win any game on the road or at home giving up 91 points. Granted, they scored 86, which is great, but, yeah, the young guys have a lot of work to do defensively and figuring out what Richmond wants to do, and until that time, when they kind of figure it out, I think the rotations are going to kind of be all over the place here early on.
Yeah, I think one guy that I definitely noticed kind of sliding out of the rotation was Jakari White, and Tajavis Miller definitely sliding into the rotation. I think Tajavis as a starting two is something that should probably happen sooner rather than later. I have no qualms with Lance Waddles whatsoever. As I've mentioned, I think the kid's a bucket, but right now I think maybe kind of a bench gunner or a microwave type, you know, guy where he heats up quick could be his best. And really, I think David just knows that Tajavis is one of his best five, like 14 points, 9 assists, 5 boards. Like that kid, he's at as advertised with the high 3-star, number one recruit in Bison basketball history. He looks like that to me right now. And I think if we're going to take, you know, any big positive away from what we've just seen, like that's their ability to score, their talent level. Hostreiter going 7 of 7 from deep. I'm never worried about what North Dakota State will look like defensively in February and March.
I think the teams the last few years, I mean, they were really, really good defensively because they could use their length. They could switch. Rocky could guard any guard. When if you got switched on them, Edie could guard a post player or a guard. And I think it's a bit of a different team. I mean, this team can obviously score it, but they're going to have to learn how to do it defensively, because once you get into the grind of conference games when these teams know the style of play that everyone plays, it's going to be different. They're going to need to defend.
Yeah, and I think that the key guy is going to be Grant Nelson. If he's going to play full-time at the four, he has to be malleable. He's got to protect the rim. Even though Morgan's playing the five, I think Grant really has to direct that defense kind of in a way like Kevin Garnett did with the Celtics when he would play power forward and really be the anchor. He has the length, he has the athleticism. I think in year three he has the strength. Obviously, you know, Kevin Garnett's a ridiculous comp and a lofty comp, but I just mean, I think, not that Morgan can't defend, but Grant has to be elite at what he does if NDSU is going to keep teams in the 60s, and that's what coach wants to do is keep teams in the 60s.
Yeah, and I thought he did a great job this past week with rim protection and kind of anchoring the lane. And like you said, Andrew Morgan's not going to be a big shot blocker. Yeah, he's 6'9", 6'10", and a big body, but I thought Grant did a great job protecting the rim. He had some pretty highlight reel blocks, and he's going to have to be the anchor to that. And Bolden's going to have to be the guy to take away the other team's best guards. The young guys are obviously going to figure some stuff out defensively. And I think there's a couple spots that I saw, at least watching some games, where they just kind of got blown by. They're going to need to take a little more pride defensively. And I think kind of like a guy like Bowden, once he kind of took some pride in that towards the middle to end of last year, he saw more minutes, and he ended up playing better offensively because of it. So a lot of work to do, but I think there's still plenty of positives from this first week. Obviously, you don't want to go 0-3, but matters how good we are in February and March, not November.
And I think Pacific's going to do a lot better than 10th in their league. And that's the one thing, though, that I think you do look at, because Bowden became their top defender, but like Tyree could be a top level defender type player against whatever, against a post, against a guard. Griesel was not a slouch. I mean, there's just flat out length when you go from Yoder and Damari to Griesel. There's a huge difference. And so they've got to, and look, man, I really like Tyler Beard. I think he's the Georgetown transfer. I think he's a high level mid-major point guard, and he's going to give teams in the WCC a lot of trouble. I'm not panicking, but the on-ball defense from the guards is obviously, I think, the biggest issue. I don't know that I had a ton of problems with anything that Morgan did. I don't know that I had a ton of problems with anything that Nelson did, but the first half was a layup line. I mean, it just can't happen. So,
and the big thing with that is if guards are getting blown by, that's putting Morgan and Nelson in bad situations to foul. And they're probably our two best offensive players, or two of the best, and we need them on the floor. There's not a lot of depth there at the 4 and 5 spot with Josh Streitz scoring wise. So we need them on the floor, which means they got to stay out of foul trouble, and which the guards are going to need to defend a little bit better on the ball for sure going forward.
Yeah, unless Hostreiter's going to play the 4 and just never miss a 3 in his life.
Yeah, that'll be nice. I mean, 7 for 7, holy crap. He was on fire.
That was fun to watch, but I think he's really my big surprise through 3 games. I knew about Javis. I watched Waddles in practice. You know, everyone knew that the point guard position is a very open competition with Damari Wheeler-Thomas, with Yoder. I think Yoder is squarely out in front right now, but Damari hasn't seen live bullets in a long time, so I'm very much willing to give him a pass so far. But what I will say is the guys I didn't know how they were going to fit in were Hostreiter and Feddersen, and I think Feddersen, unless something absolutely bonkers happens, is going to get that red shirt. And I think that's a good idea. But the issue then is the question for me then was, how does Hostreiter fit in? Will they go small when they go with this? Because I knew Streit was going to play the backup 5. So will they go small when Nelson and Morgan are off the floor? Now, Hostreiter's not a huge guy as a power forward, but he is the more traditional A.J. Jacobson, Sam Griesel before he moved to point guard type 4 that NDSU has used. And I was really impressed with the kid. Obviously it's easy to be impressed when he goes, you know, 7 for 7 from distance, but he hit big shots against the high major clubs as well.
Yeah. Maybe you move him to have him at the 4 and Grant at the 5 when Morgan has his break, and then Morgan can come in and give Grant his little blow, and they can kind of rotate those 3 guys in that spot. I think that could be an option going forward, and I'm sure it's something Richmond and the staff will be looking at.
Absolutely. Coming up this week, they've got Indiana State. What do you know about the Sycamores?
My old buddy Will and Jared played them first game and played with them the first half and got blown out in the second half. I think they're picked middle of the pack, Missouri Valley again. I know their coach from when we – I don't know if he was new last year. I think he came from a D2 school when we played them in Fargo. He's a really good recruiter, and I'm sure they're going to have some kids ready to rock and roll. I think that old guy is still there, that I can't – Cooper Niece, I think his name is. I believe I saw him in the box score still, and he was like fifth or sixth year guy last year. So he's probably going to be their main guy. But, yeah, it'll be a good challenge. Obviously, a Missouri Valley team in basketball is one of the higher mid-major leagues, and it'll be a good challenge for him.
Yeah, having beaten Indiana State at home last year, 77-70, but that game, of course, with you know the boys, with Sam and Tyree and Rock, and yeah, Cooper Neese last year in Fargo played all 40 minutes and scored 30 points on 22 shots. So certainly a player to watch as the Bison take on the Sycamores, the Fighting Larry Birds, later on this week. Nate, thanks for your time, brother.
Thanks. Have a good one. Go Bison.
All right, we want to thank Nate for his time, driving on the way back from a convention, but always making time for the Bison basketball fans. Folks, the Bison Report Radio podcast is brought to you in part by Gateway Chevrolet. The good folks at Gateway Chevrolet have a bunch of new Silverados available right now, and they're selling them at invoice. Yes, invoice pricing on new Chevy Silverados. They've got a beautiful exterior, but even more impressive is the updated interior with the larger touch screens. The infotainment system is absolutely excellent. There are four motor options in the Silverado. In the half-ton Silverado, I myself rock the 5.3-liter V8. Excellent fuel economy for a vehicle that size. More information at gatewayfargo.com or stop by and see my friend John Cole on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo. JB, let's have a little discussion about officiating. This is a game that NDSU won. Certainly not a game that I would say they could have lost or that the refs were necessarily going to decide it. But there's some issues. Trev was talking about holding, and holding is a little subjective. Now, we even tweeted it out. That first drive, Wagey just got pulled down by the shirt collar. I mean, that should have been called. But the two big ones for me are what I would call irrefutable, or they're not a judgment call. And the other one being a judgment call, the pass interference with Mathis. I think that was pretty brutal. But the two big ones to me are third and 14. Nick Baker's about a yard and a half past the line of scrimmage, flips it to the running back. Nope, no call, which you, I don't know if you know, Jackson, you cannot cross the line of scrimmage and throw a forward pass. It is not allowed. True. The punt that NDSU recovered did not appear to touch Luke Wirtz, hit an SIU player. NDSU recovered it. The officials didn't care. And SIU goes down and scores their first touchdown of the game, which they scored a touchdown late, but that I would almost call that junk time. Really, honestly, probably took an opportunity from NDSU away to end the game. You know, I think if they recover that punt, go down, score, that's probably a wrap. Just the way that SIU was struggling to move the ball, you know, without throwing illegal forward passes. I think they would have struggled or continued to struggle in that game. Instead, you end up with a 3-point victory. But I did ask Coach about this in the press conference.
Baker was maybe past the line. I watched the game and it looked like Baker was maybe past the line on one of the third downs. And it looked like maybe that punt didn't hit Hunter, or excuse me, didn't hit Wirtz, but what is the like review mechanism? Is it sometimes easier or harder at different venues? Do you initiate the review? How could those plays have been looked at?
Great questions. I don't have all the information. There's inconsistencies on, you know, I'm told every play is looked at. How do we look at it that quickly and move on? Those are always my questions. You know, when it comes down to, that's a critical play in the game right there. Both of them are. And so, you know, it is what it is, human nature. We got a lot of things that we need to get better at. So last thing I'm going to do is point any fingers. I mean, there's so many things that we can clean up. You know, I appreciate the Stripes and what they do out there, and got a good relationship with a lot of them because I've been in the league for a number of years now.
Coach Ants with the very Marshawn Lynch, I'm just here so I don't get fine answer. But that is interesting to me, JB. Like, I think folks are frustrated. It's supposed to be Division I football. You have high-def cameras, you know, in multiple angles. I don't even know if illegal forward pass, because I know, like, he was talking with me afterwards about the Mathis thing, and I know that the Mathis thing just wasn't reviewable. You can't review interference. You can't review a penalty, but like 12 men on the field, I think you can review if there were actually 12 men on the field. So I feel like something like illegal forward pass could be reviewable. That's getting a little bit into the weeds. Not into the weeds at all, though, is that punt. And that's why I asked him, like, are you in charge? Can you, do you have a red flag you can throw on the field? I know the answer to that is no, but like, can you stop the game and make them review something? I don't know for sure the FCS's or the Valley, maybe it's conference specific. I don't know, but I don't know all of the replay rules, and he seemed to not have a great grasp on them either. You know, he was told that they're all, obviously said they're all reviewed, but how are we getting the right answers that quick? I just didn't think that this officiating crew did a very good job.
Yeah, it kind of begs the question too, you know, if me and you or me and whoever can see these plays clearly going the opposite direction of the way it was called from our, you know, from our mobile phones or from wherever we're watching it, how are they not getting, you know, these replays and these calls correct with their, you know, HD cameras and equipment and stuff like that? But, you know, it's a tough spot. You never want to be in a position where the refs can determine the outcome of a game for you. So, and I know that's what the coaches always used to say to us. If the refs are dictating a game for us, then we put ourselves in that position. But, you know, it's just tough because it seemed like the situations that they came in, that the questionable calls came in, were just always in like the most crucial situation of the game and just like massively, you know, momentum shifting spots within the game. And it always kind of seems like that, you know, looking back on it, and hindsight's 2020, but yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more of a concrete system in place, so everyone really knows what's going on with the reviews, with the camera angles, things of that nature.
For sure. I thought, you know, we always try and look at the advanced stats or the grading from Pro Football Focus College after NDSU plays. And I thought it was interesting that Cam had his second highest grade of the season. And I definitely want to remind people that this is a per play. It's a per play grade. You're not. So the fact that he only threw it 11 times on 15 dropbacks, took two sacks and scrambled twice. Those are the 15 plays they're going to grade. And on those 15 plays, he completed 7 of 11 for 94 yards, which is 8.5 yards an attempt. He was pushing the ball downfield. 13 yards is his average depth of target. You know, big time throws that were a couple of them, by the way, taken back by penalty. Converting 5 first downs on his 7 throws. And every time they needed something from Cam, he had it, whether it was the rushing touchdown, whether it was massive third down conversions. Like even the third down, there was a third down conversion to Staffel where he barely stepped out of bounds. By the way, they had time to review that one. That's weird. You know, they take that one away from Cam, and that's fine. This is the right call. Make the right call. I don't have a problem with that. And then another ineligible man downfield on an unbelievable throw to Mathis for a first down. That one gets taken away. But the one that counted to Lippy, the one that counted on the back shoulder sauce to Zach Mathis, Cam was just, man, he was everything that they needed to be, that they needed him to be. And he's having a heck of a season. We talk about Pro Football Focus College. Right now, he's the number 2 graded quarterback in the Valley, only behind Theo Day, who actually, even though Northern Iowa is not doing much, Theo's having kind of an unbelievable season. The Michigan State transfer, 6'5". I think there might be some NFL buzz around this kid because he's really slinging it around the yard. They don't have much around him.
Yeah, and PFF just, you know, backing our narrative that we've had on Cam all year, right? You know, is he going to have these crazy statistical days? Probably not. But, you know, we've just talked about him being cool, calm, and collected back there and just being a real operator and the perfect, you know, leader for this offense. And that's exactly what he has been asked to do all year. And that's exactly what he's performed. And PFF's just, you know, like I said, back in our narrative that we've been talking and that I'm sure the coaching staff has been wanting from him all year.
Yeah, efficiency. I mean, that's the word, efficiency. And that, I think sometimes efficiency and game manager are viewed as negative. Like, that's, you're not a driver of offense. You're not a driver of success. The team doesn't do well because of you. They just do well because you're not screwing up. And I, that's not the case with Cam. I just, the efficiency is unbelievable. Had another, you know, adjusted completion percentage of 70% because he had one batted down, and they count that as, you know, they don't count it as a completion. They just throw it out. And so with his, you know, one ball batted down, 7 of 11, unbelievable. He is so darn efficient, and more so than really anybody before him. And I'm not saying he's a better player than any of the quarterbacks that you think about when you think about North Dakota State football. But he just does not make mistakes with the football. I mean, very, very, very rarely making mistakes with the football. Let's talk about the Hunter thing. And I think with ribs and a shoulder and stuff like that, I think shutting him down for like 2 months was the only other option, right? I'm not a doctor. I'm not even an athletic trainer, but I don't know what the good answer was. I don't think, you know, obviously Hunter's not in any kind of danger with those injuries, and he wants to play, and he's a tough kid, obviously. You can see that he's not running over people anymore. You can see that he's not punishing tacklers anymore. He's a different kind of athlete right now, but I just don't know that even, you know, sitting him for two games after the bye week would have given him time to heal. I don't think this injury is healing until probably after the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, it's, you never really know until you're in the locker room, until you talk to these guys, but, you can definitely see it. And, you know, we talked about it, and we've noticed it, that he's not, you know, finishing the runs the way he's, you know, we're normally accustomed to him doing. But at this point in the season, let's keep this guy as healthy as possible, getting into the long stretch here. And, you know, let's sit him this week, and let's hopefully get him a bye that first round of playoffs, and just allow him to rehab, get as healthy as possible. I agree with you. I don't think, you know, holding him out for an extended amount of time was the answer with this sort of injury. Just would love to see him get as healthy as possible here over these next 2-3 weeks, and you know, really be ready for that late season push. And I know he will be, and I know he can't get wait to get back out there and be at full strength. But you know, sometimes you just got to take a step back and worry about your health going forward here.
And I want to kind of discuss the plan moving forward. I mean, I think, so the way that and the staff just won't think like this, and that's fine, but, you know, they don't have to think like I do. But if NDSU beats UND, which they're favored to do, I'm sure, even without Hunter, I'll look at it right now. Oh, boy, Tuesday morning, we don't have lines from Five Dimes yet. Goodness me. If it stays the way that, you know, it is, and North Dakota State beats UND, in my opinion, it'll end up as the number 4 seed, because I think Montana State, South Dakota State, and Sacramento State are locked in, my opinion. I don't think there's any chance Sac State loses. SDSU is literally off. And unless Montana State loses the Brawl of the Wild at home, they're going to probably stay at 3 with North Dakota State at 4. Allegedly, I had heard of some rule where if you play a team in the last game of the season, you get to avoid them in like the mini bracket and the Thanksgiving round that comes to your house. So that would make UND ineligible to come to Fargo right away. And I'm just looking at Steve Swice. Sorry, Steve, if I screwed up your name, but on the FCS Fans Nation Facebook group. And I'm just using Steve's because it's what's there. You know, they've got Dayton and Chattanooga as the two teams that would square off to come to North Dakota State. Here's some other options. NCAA&T versus Elon. Abilene Christian versus Incarnate Word. C-Law versus Mercer. Richmond versus Furman. Those are some Thanksgiving weekend matchups. You don't need Hunter Lipke to beat the winner of any of those. And I'm sounding real disrespectful right now. And that, I get that. But if you sit Hunter against UND, I think you can give him UND week, Thanksgiving week, and the round of 16 week. And then we can stop, we can start talking about having him play in the round of 8. And that buys him, you know, 3 full weeks off to get whatever is going on a little bit under control. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you there. Who knows what that playoff situation is going to, you know, shake out to be. And obviously I think the coaching staff will make the right decision depending on who that opponent is. But, you know, like we were talking about, just making sure he is as close to 100% for those last, you know, couple games are what's going to be most important here going ahead. So if we can get him 3 weeks off, I say let's try to do our best and do that. So
for sure. The defense, as usual, looks great when it's blitzing, looks great when it's attacking. Not a ton of, not a ton of guys winning one-on-one matchups on the defensive line right now. It's just not what they're doing. Spence would probably be winning some one-on-one matchups if he wasn't getting dragged down by his jersey. But right now, I don't know, Tony Pierce is, it seemed like he got hurt or just wasn't available at the end of the game. I didn't see much of him at the end of the game. Shaka's not getting to the quarterback right now. Obviously no Kava. Hendricks isn't doing much as a pass rusher. He's been fine as a run defender. They're so capable though of, I don't know if necessarily winning one-on-one matchups in the back end, but holding on. They're so capable of playing cover zero and sending guys that I think just, again, the best version of this defense was the attacking one and not the one where you're just forced to hold and give up a 4th and 22 or whatever it was. And I'm not picking on that play specifically, but this is not a rush 4 and cover with 7 defense at its peak, I don't think. Do you have any thoughts on that, JB?
Yeah, no, it was evident, when they were on the attack, and the defense looks so much more sound and so much more aggressive when they are on the attack. But I think that's too because we've gotten to this point in the season now. People are getting more familiar with the playbook, with the adjustments mid-game, things of that nature. And you just didn't see as big of the holes, as big of the gaps, as big of the mistakes that you see early on in the season, and that allows guys to play faster and allows, our scheme to be more attacking in nature. And I think, just the more this defense gets into the season and the more developed and experienced some of these younger guys, some of these rotational guys get, the more we're going to be able to attack. And we saw it this weekend, people flying around and not only, flying around to make plays, but also flying, just for example, you see Mike Tutsy making all these, missile style tackles that we always talk about, right? But some of the times what you don't see is Mike Tutsy flying up just to cover his gap, 100 miles an hour, getting up to his gap and then maybe not making the play, but forcing it to somebody else who's also in their right position. And then, these different plays like that, it just allows guys to tee off and be a lot more aggressive because the gaps are smaller, the defense is more sound, and things are becoming clearer and clearer as the season goes on and as these games go on.
I asked Coach in the press conference, and we didn't have time to put this one together, but they're forced now, I think, to play Marquis Siegel. He was the number one snapping corner. He had 44. I'll just run through the corner snaps quick. Siegel with 44, Courtney with 29, JP with 13, and Destin. Oh, goodness me. Never mind. I'm sorry. Destin was 62. So Destin darn near didn't come off the field. But neither did Siegel, really. I mean, 44 out of SIU ran 71 plays. Boy, that's a lot of plays. SIU ran 71 plays. Shout out to Tut and Doss with the. Every snap except Tut was apparently off the field once. But the point that I'm trying to make here is they just are forced now to play Siegel. Siegel has the number 2 coverage grade in the entire conference from PFF. college. And I understand that that's a little bit of a limited sample size just because he hasn't snapped as many times as like a Miles Harden from University of South Dakota or the kid from, I believe, Illinois State. That's number one, on the ranking, number seven on film, number seven. Like the kid's name is escaping me, but he was really good. Siegel was targeted three times, actually targeted four times because of the one on the free play. He picked off the ball on the free play. The other three times he was targeted, they did not complete a pass. He also himself broke one of those up, a QB rating of 39.6 when being targeted. You can't get anything over there. And that's, it's funny because I kind of thought Courtney Eubanks was going to be that player. And I still have very high hopes for Courtney, but Marquise is actually becoming the don't throw it over here guy that I thought maybe Courtney could become.
Yeah. It's, you know, we talk about it a lot. You know, with these young guys, it's how are you going to force your way onto the field? How are you going to make this coaching staff find a way to play you? And I think we've been seeing that as the season progresses, you know, finding different ways to use different guys, whether it is Courtney, whether it is Destin, JP, you know, Siegel has he's found his way onto the field just because of his, you know, his obvious skill sets and how well he's just been playing and executing when the lights do shine bright on him. But another thing is you can just see his confidence. It's radiating from him. You know, when he is making plays, he's making them confidently, and he knows he can make a play against every receiver he lines up against. And that's something that's so important at the cornerback position. Love to see it out of a young guy like that. And I think there's a lot of translatable and relatable situations to, you know, some of the guys that I played with back in my day. Wow. Sounding old there, but no, it's just great to see, and he's just playing confident, and you love to see it at the cornerback position.
These numbers are something. Season long for Siegel, they've thrown at him 16 times. He's allotted six catches for 91 yards total.
Wow.
And they credited him with the 58-yard touchdown by Western Illinois. Otherwise, these things would be just silly. Because, I mean, over half of his yards are one 58-yard touchdown against WIU with 54 yards of yak. Just unfortunate. But even with that touchdown play, two picks, three pass breakups, a passer rating when targeting Siegel this year of 38.3. That is worse, by the way, than if you just threw it at the turf. Because if you just threw it at the turf, your passer rating is 39.6. He's been incredible. I mean, truly, a star in the making. Because he's a leaguer, I think. I mean, that because Marquise has NFL cornerback size. So, anyway, the young defensive tackles look like they're growing up. Asked Matt about those in the press conference. Jackson playing really well. Heisman is a guy that's playing well, and some smoke that Eli Mostert has a chance, not this week against UND, but maybe first second round of the playoffs. I've seen him walking around. He's out of the boot. And now look, folks, there's a very big difference from being out of the boot and being able to, you know, move a 300-pound guard off of his position. There's a huge difference there, but, you know, getting healthy, rehabbing, and you know, like we said, maybe he could still be 3 weeks from meaningful football. So potential for number 53 back. But I thought the defensive line, especially the defensive tackles, in a situation where if they didn't keep their linebackers clean, Javon Williams Jr. could have had a big day. I was impressed.
Absolutely. You know, don't want to get into the, you know, details too much, but you can just see they were forced to mature throughout the season here with these injuries and things of that nature. And, you know, they've really responded. Are we seeing, you know, some crazy performances, you know, statistically, things of that nature? Not necessarily, but you can just see guys are, you know, doing their job, staying in their lanes and making plays when they're asked to, and, you know, really just, you know, responding to the kind of forced situation that was put on them this year.
For sure. Folks, we are just going to have so much fun in December here in Horace at Tundra Mania. a wrestling event that we are putting on at the Horace Senior Community Center. They're debuting a new championship, phenomenal card, and an all ages event. $15 for general admission, and all kids under five get in free. Meaning if there are two of you, you can come for $30 and bring all 12 of your kids. We'll let them in. No big deal. Big Deck Barbecue doing the food. It's going to be amazing. And Wild Rice Bar and Grill will have your favorite beer and cocktails. It's going to be a ton of fun. December 11th, doors at 3:30, show at 4:30. By the way, the Packers are off. The Vikings play at noon. There's no, you know, no big football clash there. Come out, have a great time. By the way, I said $15. Whether you want front row seats, whether you want a VIP table, or whether you want to come general admission, use promo code Bison Report. That's all one word. Use promo code Bison Report for 10% off your ticket order for Tundra Mania. Come on out. It's going to be a really, really fun time. I think the one thing that Coach Entz was annoyed with, and I think it's valid, is you get a 3-yard punt, which was just electric. It was an absolute electric factory. But you get a 3-yard punt, and you get the Dawson Weber pick, and you get no points. I think that's struggling. I think that's a little bit deflating for a defense too. I mean, you hold, they have a terrible kick, you turn the other team over. I think that's got to be a little tough.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you said, it's deflating for not only the offense, but the defense. But really, I just wanted, I mean, credit to SIU in those situations, a couple guys with some fantastic individual efforts and, you know, just making plays when they were asked to on a short field. That's an impressive stat and an impressive, you know, thing to watch there. So, you know, as much as it is disappointing for us too, you got to give credit to them, and they were ready for it. Now, you know, I obviously know the coaches aren't going to be harping that that's going to be a major point of contention and a major topic here to be focused on this week. But credit to SIU in those positions.
Tumeric, I thought, was big time, and he's going to have to be big time. You know, I think they'll get Dom Ganella back, and he's a fine change of pace back. And honestly, like, you can build the whole offense around Tumeric and Kobe for 60 minutes, which is what they need to get done against UND. You know, Tumeric with the hammer and Kobe with a little bit of the speed. They still got Jalen Bussey available. They still got TK Marshall available. Just because you can't hand the ball to Hunter Lipke doesn't mean you can't build an offense. But I think 22, especially, and we'll talk about UND's lack of size in the preview pod, I think he's going to be big against North Dakota, and he was big against SIU.
Yeah, so many different guys in this offense can provide such a different spark. This week it was T-Mac, it was Tumeric, and gosh, I love seeing him run the ball, and I would love to see him continuing to be, you know, a staple guy in the backfield going forward, just because of how he has responded and how he has, you know, really started to carry some of the heavy loads here, especially like you said against UND this week. Maybe they're lacking a little bit up front. I would love to see him, you know, keep running over some people and really establishing that dominance on the ground. But you just never know with this offense who's going to, you know, take the torch and who's going to have the best game of their season. You know, we see it with Kobe. We see it with him. We see it with Dom. And we see it, obviously, with Hunter and TK. But it's kind of a toss-up on who's going to have a great game. I'd love to see some different guys continue to get in the mix. But, yeah, Tumeric just – showing why he is, you know, a guy that we can really rely on, keep falling back on in tough, you know, physical games like that.
Defensively, wanted to take a quick look at the snaps. K's, you know, with the player of the game or player of the week status for the Valley. Very impressed with him. But yeah, you know, 63 snaps for him. I don't know that I love it, but you know, we've talked about that, but it's what they've chosen to do. Other interesting linebacker numbers. Wirtz had 42 to Kubitz's 28. I think Wirtz is slowly working his way onto the positive side of that rotation. I don't believe, unless I'm missing something here, that we had an Oscar Benson snap. So Oscar looks like he's lost that battle to Julian, but Julian only had 15 snaps to Cole Wisniewski's 31. Cole, it looks like Oscar's on special teams. It looks like Cole's Sam, and they'll still put Julian in there a little bit, but that seems to be, I think, what they'll go to war with. Logan Kopp, two defensive snaps. Everybody knows my thoughts.
Yeah,
I'm not playing Logan Kopp.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, just since you talked about Logan, just want to throw in, expect to see him more. I mean, can't say enough about that kid. He's just flying around. It seems like every time he's on the field, he's making plays, whether it's specials or, you know, out on defense. But just such an interesting, you know, collection of skills and collection of guys in that room. They're going to continue to sift that out and, you know, expect to, from different team to team, to have little different packages. You know, obviously Wirtz is a little bigger, more physical guy. So, you know, against a team like SIU, maybe they wanted to go with him more, but they might switch that up. And, you know, Kubitz might be, you know, taking more snaps against a pass-heavy team. Who knows? But I do like what I'm seeing out of all the different guys. It seems like when opportunities arise, they're making plays. So really positive there. It's an interesting rotation, like you've said, an interesting situation on who's getting playing time. But I love to see it, and it's just going to keep developing a lot of people that, you know, not only have a lot left in the tank for the rest of this season, but, you know, throughout the rest of their careers, there's going to be a lot of development here.
All right. We ask you this most weeks. What are they working on this week as they prepare for senior day and for UND?
I think it's one and the same. And, you know, this is a rivalry, quote unquote. And so the energy is going to be different, and it's going to have that little bit different buzz and that little bit different of a feel. But it's senior day, and, you know, we always play really well on senior day, at least in my experience. And I just think really too, this is a week that, you know, maybe some things start setting in for some guys, especially some older guys. And, you know, maybe let's step back from the X's and O's side of things, and let's just really, you know, step back and be thankful for what these seniors have done for this program, and really enjoy this, you know, week of practice. You're only guaranteed so many opportunities every year, and this is one of the last ones. So we'd just really love to, you know, for the guys to have a great week of practice, remain positive. The energy is going to be high with this rivalry, and obviously just paying tribute to these guys who have put their heart and soul into the program. It's going to be a fun week for them. I know they're starting to have all their different senior speeches and things like that. Just a lot of positive energy going around the program heading into a rivalry week. Nothing too much on the X's and O's front for me.
All righty. We appreciate you, Mr. Jackson Brown. We appreciate all you wonderful people for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, Gateway Chevrolet and Tundra Insurance. Have just a phenomenal week, everybody. It's UND week. Let's go, Bison.